Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. Now it's time for a Spotlight Star Wars with your host, Ken Knapsack.
Well, Spotlight Star Wars fans, is there some of you still out there? Yeah, it's been a while since we've done this show. I'm Ken Knapsack here for the 150th, if my numbers are correct, and sometimes they're not, but I do have a good chart now tracking things, our 150th edition of Spotlight Star Wars for newer fans. We have been very fortunate to have newer folks jump on the Force Center train, the train through Vandor here. Because of Book of Boba Fett, Spotlight Star Wars is always kind of a monologue from me, Ken Knapsack, to you, fellow Star Wars fans. Just kind of go where my heart and soul takes me. And I've been doing that actually since before Force Center began. Spotlight Star Wars was on my old and still going Knapsack Files podcast feed. It was going to be Spotlight Star Wars, Spotlight Game of Thrones, Spotlight whatever. And Spotlight Star Wars just kind of came along and kind of took over. And then I said, I want to do a feed. Hey, Joseph. Hey, Jennifer Landa. Can you come over to my apartment in Studio City. Let's create Force Center. We all did. And Spotlight Star Wars was the first kind of repeating show over there. So it's kind of historic today. And I'm so happy that you all go along on that journey. Now, that said, it's a monologue from me to you, but occasionally some wonderful friends get brought along for the party. And today, for this historic 150th edition of Spotlight Star Wars, I am so happy to welcome back to Force Center my friend Billy Patterson. Billy, welcome back to the show.
I know it's a formality on these things to be like, oh, I'm so excited to be here. No, literally, I've been counting down the hours since you basically had to cave and let me come on to talk about this topic, because I've been dying to talk about this for years.
Yes.
Years.
This is great. This is wonderful. Yeah, Billy, a lot of you might remember Billy Biz, or no Billy Biz, from his time at Screen Junkies, now at Fandom, still working over there. He was the TV Fights producer after I left, and we were both Roxy Stryer's number twos on that show. We share that distinction, and we love Star Wars. We used to talk about Star Wars in the break room, and Billy wanted to talk about this topic, and if you've clicked on the episode, you saw the topic, but it is... We're looking back 25 years later at Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, the special edition release in Empire and Jedi as well, coming up in February and March. Hey, we'll have a separate celebration for those. So we're going to dive into that, and this is a free-form conversation, an interview between two fans who, you know, Billy, you and I are both the same level of grumpy. But I forget, you know, there's a Star Wars generation between us, right? So you are a special edition kid.
Yeah, we don't wave the flag loud and proud, or at least I don't know a lot of people that jumped on at the special edition point. I know prequel people, and I know people who came before it, but the special edition jump on point, I don't know a lot of people that went there. At least they don't talk about it.
They're out there, and I'm sure even after today, some are going to kind of raise their hands and say, hey, Billy, hey, Ken, that's me as well. The other like prominent one I know is my friend Maude Garrett, who I co-created and co-hosted Jedi Alliance with on the Popcorn Talk Network. That was it. That's what she said. 11, New Hope, special editions. That's how I fell in love with Star Wars. We here at Force Center love what we call the entry points. As that makes sense. That's how you entered into Star Wars. And when you really take time to hear other people's entry points and learn about them, respect them, and have fun celebrating Star Wars no matter how you got to it, I think you start to just learn more about the fandom and people's experiences and moves yourself outside your walls, for me, the original trilogy walls. And I've always been fascinated with Billy, so we're going to really dive into you being a special edition baby.
I love it. You know, I know every generation thinks that they are the best generation and the generations before them didn't get it. I'm not going to say that, but I'm going to say, like, looking at everything, it's like, wow, I can't imagine jumping into this fandom at any other time than 1997.
Let's start there. I'm fascinated by that because you're so right. It is a weird, you know, there's obviously the Gen Z, Gen X, and millennials and boomers and the generations of us people, but generations of Star Wars fans, I think the special edition fans get forgotten in the discourse and the conversation and even the jokes about the changes. And yes, we're going to talk about George's changes. But the prequel generation is strong just 2 years later. The original trilogy generation ruled for a long time. And then there's even like kind of the early 90s EU Zahn and Thrawn generation. I think we can explore those as well. So how do you feel? You feel loud and proud being special edition. Do you feel overlooked in the conversation?
It's strange because I think the conversation turned into like the special editions are like this iconoclastic strike against Star Wars, as opposed to like, if it wasn't for the special editions, I probably would have watched Star Wars at some point in my life. I probably would have really liked it, maybe even loved it still, but it definitely would not be in like the fabric of my DNA as it was, because I got to experience, you know, 6 years of hype and 6 years of waiting and 6 years of anticipation that the generation before me had. in the span of 3 months. Like, I didn't have to wait. I had it all. I walked out of that movie theater and the world of Star Wars had already been built. Like, it was ready for me at that point.
It's like you almost got to walk out of the cinema, turn around and walk right back in for Empire.
There was a day, and I didn't do it, and to this day I regret it, but I couldn't do it. But there was a day when I went to see A New Hope, and this was later, like in April, and you could theoretically have walked from A New Hope to Empire to Jedi in that theater and spent the whole day there watching Star Wars. It was like going in a time machine where it was just like, imagine if you're a kid coming out of Star Wars in 1977. It's like, hey, you want to go watch the next one right now? Like, I theoretically got to do that.
That's insane. I love that. And this is, again, why I love having these conversations and looking at it differently than I did. And, I'm going to talk about my experience as well, but this is definitely more about your experience. What you said, too, is right. If there wasn't the special editions, I'm sure at some point you would have stumbled on the VHS collection or these new fandangled DVDs, and you would have said, oh, Star Wars. Do you really feel, look, it's hard to say because this is not the way it happened. This is a big what if. But yeah, would have just have been part of the landscape versus something right dead center of your life.
So I will say that the special editions were not the first attempt at watching a Star Wars.
Gotcha.
In 1995-ish, when, you know, I feel like Star Wars was just probably starting to make a comeback. Again, I don't really know because it wasn't on my radar. It was not Batman Forever, so I didn't care. But, you know, like the Power of the Force line is coming back out, and those VHSs with my all-time favorite Star Wars art, you know, the black ones with the Vader, Yoda, and Stormtrooper helmet. And I went to Matt Nishina's house, and Matt Nishina had A New Hope on. And I was like, okay, this is Star Wars. Like, I've seen Darth Vader looks cool enough. I know what he looks like. And I know, like, I'm your father just culturally. I don't know what it means in context.
Right.
And it was the scene where the droids land on Tatooine. And it was about, I don't know, 5 minutes. I was like, this is it? This is Star Wars? This sucks. Like, this is boring. Like, I don't care. And I remember just like, okay, maybe Star Wars is awesome, but this ain't it, pal.
There's just two robots walking in the sand
for a really long time. Like, at least as a kid, it felt, I was like, oh my God, where are they going? I kind of don't even care anymore. But then I remember maybe, I don't know, not too long after that, I was at the mall and I was at Suncoast Video.
Yes.
And, I was just looking around at different, I don't know what I would be looking at that age, but, I remember looking up, you know, they would always play a movie on the TV screens, and I see, okay, there's a guy in a poncho and some guy in like white armor on these like floating motorcycles in the middle of a forest. This is kind of neat. What's that? And then I watched that whole scene. And when Luke, you know, jumps off and ignites his saber, I was like, is this a Star War? Is this, this is definitely not like you buried the lead if this is a Star War. And I remember like my grandma's like, okay, we got to go. And I was like, all right. So I know Star Wars gets cool at some point, but I don't know where. And I kind of just forgot about it until the special edition hype started.
Can I ask if you don't want to give your exact age, what age in 95 are you when you see this stuff?
When I'm in 95, I am 8 years old.
Okay. So I was 7 when I saw Jedi, but that was different because it was going to the theater on opening night. This thing's going on. It's crazy. So, all right. So, but that's around. Yeah. Cause you don't know, like you said, you hear, I am your father is something that's just out there probably on t-shirts. Yeah. Whatever. Like I always joke, like about 1980, I thought Battlestar Galactica and Star Wars were the same thing. Your mind just doesn't know what's going on.
That was like Star Wars and Star Trek. And I think part of that was kind of like, again, and Star Trek was something I did get into later, but I thought that, you know, you're right with like Heir to the Empire and all this expanded stuff. And then all these toys and everything, it was like Star Wars just felt like it was too big for me to jump into. And it, and just like seeing that clip of like the droids, I was like, and I just don't have the patience for it if this is what Star Wars is. Like, I don't get it. I'm not into it until the special edition.
because it's big. It's the event. It's the trailer. My relationship to the trailer, and I'm going to drop when we take a break here, Four Center fans, I'm just going to play the trailer in the break. You know, you get a commercial break and you get a trailer break because it's just so part of my young adulthood. And I was working in radio at the time. I had my rock radio job and I was at and that's the other thing too. I had some of the magazines, everything, but movie news clearly wasn't what it was. And I just remember being in a theater and my first viewing of, is that an X-Wing? And then see it again for the first time, the Star Wars. What is happening? So I have a different relationship to that. Did you see that trailer and react to it in any way? Or were you like the robot movie?
So no, I didn't. You know, when I saw that trailer, when I went to go see A New Hope. It was part of the trailer,
yeah,
of the movie because they were obviously advertising the next two. So I didn't see that trailer until I was already seated for A New Hope. But by that point, the only reason that I got hyped for the special editions was actually because a year prior, the biggest blockbuster on the planet that people were lining up for and everyone was talking about was Independence Day.
Yes.
And I remember my dad said on 4th of July, all right, tonight we're all going to go to Independence Day. And for whatever reason, it just didn't happen that night. Yeah. I went to Independence Day a week later. And even though I was like, yeah, this movie's fine, but I feel like I missed something because like I just remember the excitement of like we're going to Independence Day tonight and seeing on the news that everyone was lined up for it. And I didn't go till the next week when you could just walk in and see it. Uh-huh. So when the special edition came out, I was like, okay, I don't really care until I saw on the news that Friday that people were lined up around the block in Fresno, of all places.
Yeah.
Like my little town, people are lining up to see Star Wars. And then I was like, I can't let Independence Day happen again. I have to go see this. I don't know why. Something is calling me that like, if I do not see this movie in the theater this weekend, right, this movie that I've already seen part of and thought was boring, right, I will die.
And you might. So welcome to Earth and welcome to Star Wars. That's fascinating. It is. And look, I do love the first Independence Day. I haven't seen the follow-up, so I can't judge it at all. But I remember my friend Joel, a big Kiss fan like you too, Billy, came to the table at the well, we just call it cafeteria at the community college we're at, but I guess that's what it was, the meeting lunch area. And he sat down. He's like, I saw that Independence Day. That is the Star Wars of our time. It's like, really? Okay. Let me go see it.
Suppose at the time, yeah, the cinematic or like special effects and everything was great, but yeah. I guess that's also what's interesting. We talked about later was like, you know, a generation saw Star Wars and was wowed by the special effects. I'm coming to Star Wars. Like I've seen Independence Day and movies already that have rivaled those special effects. So Star Wars couldn't get by on just spectacle alone at that point, you know?
That's a great point, Billy. And that's something I think I still hear. It's not like super prevalent in the discourse or anything out there, but I've met the fans and talked to the fans or seen some tweets of someone who's just like, hey, look, Clone Wars is my introduction to Star Wars. That Luke guy and Jedi and everything, it's not my favorite. And that might cause me to go, oh, but that's the point of these conversations and the point of the entry points. You're going to look at Star Wars differently. And you're right. In 97, you're sitting down and it's like, wow me, because, you know, I've already seen things. I've already seen Will Smith take on aliens.
The White House is already blown up. Like, I've already seen it all. So you can't just, you know, like, let's just say, like, I'm not going to have the same feeling as a kid walking out in 1977. Right. But I also think that, you know, in terms of just like mass media, it's a gross generalization to be like, it is pure spectacle. Because it's like, clearly, it's not just that. Because, you know, they kept a fair amount of the old effects in the special edition, which people also forget. And it's not mind-blowing in 1997, you know?
No, going through that list of changes, we'll get to that in the second half of the show, some more about the changes, but just going through the list, there's some that I'm just like, oh, wow, there's a lot of cleared-up smudges and edges. Like, a lot of that. It's like everything else kind of stays the same. But I want to talk about that. The first viewing, you go there, January 31st, 1997. Where were you, kids? Where were you? I was at a 10 a.m. showing in Arroyo Grande, California. Billy, you were up in the beautiful town of Fresno, north on the 5 freeway, right?
I was at the Broadway Fair Theater in Fresno, and I almost didn't make it. I almost didn't make the weekend. I saw it at about 5 or 6 p.m. on Sunday.
Oh,
I just barely made the cutoff.
So you had like, I think mine was like a Thursday. It might have been 11 a.m. show I did at the time, but because my radio shift ended at 10 a.m. and I gathered up about six of my friends. Only me really wanted to see it. You know, like, I think my friend Joel might have been in that one. He was a big Star Wars fan too, so he wanted to. But some people were like, yeah, Star Wars is fun. Yeah, sure, I'll go with you. And I had six tickets to two showings that day back to back. And when the first showing ended, everyone looked around. They're like, we've got to watch it again. I was like, yeah. But even then, I was kind of like, I don't know. I guess we will. I guess we'll stick around. Anyways, I want to go to your viewing, Billy. That's the real focal point here. Is this the one? Did you come right away? What changed? Take me through that first viewing.
So first of all, my mom loved Star Wars. My dad, I guess she had taken my dad to see Star Wars when they were, you know, dating, and he fell asleep, so he could care less. So he wasn't going to take me. My mom wanted to take me, but she couldn't. So I went with my neighbor, who's about, I don't know, 10 years older than me. She babysat us a lot, Heather. Yeah. And so she was the one that got me into her. She had a twin sister, Carrie, who got me really into the Beatles, and she got me really into Star Wars.
Wow.
So I went with Heather to Star Wars. So I guess technically you could say it's my first date too. So there you go. Put that down in the book.
Look at you.
Look at me, a little, Romeo in fifth grade. So I remember sitting down in the theater, and I remember the first trailer that they showed was Batman and Robin. And right, this was pre-internet, this, or for me at least.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know they were making another Batman. And I was like, you know what? Even if this movie sucks, I've already got my return on investment. They made a new Batman movie. I saw a preview of a new Batman. Like, I'm already in a good mood.
By the way, I love that back in the day. Yeah. Back in the day, the number one source for movie news was trailers or posters in the lobby.
Yeah, crazy to think that I didn't know they were making a new movie until I saw a preview in the theater, right? You can't even imagine it nowadays.
It's tough to believe. And look, I had a lot of the Cinescapes and a lot of those, you know, I was studying screenwriting, so I had a lot of those movie magazines, but, you know, they were behind. They were their old style. They weren't tweeting out the movie news, rumor of this and that. And so I remember how many times you go in there and be like, what is this? Tarantino made another one? He made another film? Wow. Jackie Brown? Okay, let's go see it. So the trailer, yeah, that might juice you up there right at the beginning.
So I was juiced for that. And then they showed, you know, as we talked about, this special edition trailer for Star Wars. And just the excitement in the crowd cheering, seeing this thing. And what's crazy is, and I've never experienced this before because what a crazy boutique situation this is, but to get a trailer, like people so hyped for a trailer for something you're immediately about to watch is I can't undervalue how like the atmosphere already put me into the mindset of like, well, I must have been wrong about what I saw, you know, already and didn't like. There must have been something I was wrong about, because clearly, like, even just seeing footage from that trailer of what I knew was coming down the road, I was like, there's gonna be awesome stuff. There might be some droids wandering around in the desert, but there's gotta be some cool stuff in between that, right? You know?
I love this idea. I wouldn't mind seeing this for bigger pictures. Maybe we do kind of the trailer right before, you know, Endgame, where it's about 5 minutes away, but here's the trailer. Get hyped, kids, get hyped.
Honestly, I, in hindsight, it just made me feel like validated in a weird way what I was about to see was special. Pun intended, you know?
Yeah. So the movie starts, those robots are roaming around the desert. Are you like this again? Are you hooked in? Is the vibe and the energy, the momentum just pushing you onward to a different feeling?
It's one of those things where it's just like context is king, where, even though I had seen, Independence Day and all these other big blockbuster movies already in my life, still the shot of a Star Destroyer hovering above your head that never ends. Like, I was like, all right, well, clearly, you know, Matt Nishina started the tape at the wrong part, you know, or I came 10 minutes too late to this party, 'cause this is awesome. This should have been my first exposure. But I think I was taken in. So by the time that you get to the droids on Tatooine, like, sure, even to this day, I still kind of like, All right, I'll go, you know, make a sandwich real fast while this part's playing. Yep. I don't hate it. It's just like, okay, I get it. But even then at that point, I was like, I'm on board for whatever this is. Yeah. Like, now I want to know where they were going. And when we get there, I'm very excited. And, you know, I have a hard time kind of remembering how I felt for the whole movie, except the Death Star trench. I was just like, this is the coolest part of a movie I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, There's nothing compares to how cool the Death Star trench attack is.
And there's not even Will Smith or Jeff Goldblum in it. It's still cool.
No. There's no like must go faster. There's none of that. But I was just like enthralled and just like, I can't believe This, what I'm seeing is a thing, you know, it's hard to verbalize like what 10-year-old me thought that he was seeing, but it was just very, just like, I can't believe that this is a thing. And I can't believe that this is a movie that has been sitting here for 10 years and no one put it in front of my face.
I would love to call your friend Matt and just be like, did you start it at the wrong point or did you oversell and undersell it? Like, what was that charity? How did that work out there?
I would love to track down Matt Nishina now and just be like, dude, why didn't you tell me to just like wait like 5 more minutes? Like you let me go too soon.
You're like Luke with Obi-Wan. Well, why didn't you tell me?
But I mean, honestly, like in hindsight, it's just like, What a great way to get hooked on this thing, which is just like the first time you see Star Wars is on the biggest screen possible and with the cleanest print, you know, anyone had seen to that point, with a group of people who already knew like the social cues of when to applaud, when to clap, when to laugh, when to gasp. So it's just like, I just felt like I was taken on this journey by the movie, but also taken on this journey by like your generation that had already lived it and was kind of like, come on, kid, you know, like, come see what this is, you know?
Hey, look, Star Wars is so much about the generational change and passing on. There's a little bit of us going, this is your fight now. Yeah, no, and look, we're going to get into a little bit more details later about some of the things we like, dislike, and there's a lot to talk around the special editions, but I love kind of experiencing this with you again, seeing it again for the first time through your eyes as you're about 10 years of age. So when you come pouring out of the theater or the movie ends and the medal ceremony and the credits are rolling, you know, take me to that moment, Billy. Take me to that that experience right then.
It's funny because I don't remember how I felt initially. I remember that night when I got home, it was about 9 or 10 PM. And for whatever reason to this day, I don't know. There was like, I had the school day off the next day, if it was like a staff development day or whatever. And I remember my mom coming into my room and saying like, hey, you're going to go to grandma's house tomorrow. I was like, okay. And she's like, oh, she also, she bought, cause we used to play Game Boy at my grandma's house. She's like, and she bought this Star Wars game. And I know you just saw the movie, so you can play that tomorrow. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, this just feels like, have I won some invisible lottery where I saw the coolest movie ever and already the merch is pulling, is starting to just fall into, like, it felt like cornily enough, like destiny, like, yes, this was all supposed to happen to me. And with like, within the next week, I already had my first 3 action figures, which was the Power of the Force, Darth Vader, Hoth Gear Han Solo, which I didn't know what that meant yet, but that was the only Han Solo that was available.
I did not see this jacket in the movie. This is weird. Okay.
I was like, okay, I know that this hasn't happened yet, and he probably only wears this for 5 seconds, but they are sold out of toys everywhere right now, so this is the best I can get. And I got the Luke, but it was Luke on this, like, it was like deluxe Luke, which was the only one they had, on this like little space Segway that clearly is not in the movie. But those were my 3 Star Wars action figures. And for a very long time, it was just the adventures of Han and Hoth Luke versus Darth Vader until I could get a bigger collection.
Man, you're I'm in my mind going back to 1997 and just the toys, the power of the Force. And in an, again, my experience a little different in that I'm, you know, 21 years of age working, you know, cool job. I'm a local radio rock guy and everything. And this was me in the theater just going, wait, I can still love this stuff. I get to love this stuff and it's still everywhere. And it's coming back. Like not just Bendems, like figures and toys and movies. It you could really feel it, but to see it through your eyes, you come out, it's like you come out of the theater and you said it very early in the show, Billy. This world is already built. The fandom's already built. A lot of us are reconnecting with it, our generation. But you walk out into a fully formed Star Wars fandom in a way.
It felt, and maybe this is the naivete of like a 10-year-old, but like it felt like it was all for me, you know? It was like, you loved this movie and this thing is so cool. Well, guess what? It is everywhere. And it's not like Batman Forever where there's movies or there's toys from this movie. There's toys from this series, from this movies that I don't even know yet, but I'm going to know real soon. Like it just felt like I had just like, I don't know, like I had access to something exclusive, like yeah. Something special. Like I was keyed into something, you know, mm-hmm. Again, like I was the only person on the planet that was into Star Wars at that minute.
It is this phenomenon that it goes beyond Star Wars. I'm not the first to talk about it, or I definitely didn't create this term, but I always say this shared unique journey where it is, you absolutely feel, I am the only one that appreciates that Wedge gets promoted in Return of the Jedi. Now he gets to say Lock S. Foyle's intact position. That was something I thought only I appreciated. And then I met my other friends who were like, you know what? I love when Wedge is Red Leader. And I'm like, oh, wait, you love that too. And that is the joy of it. And that's when you connect with Star Wars on that level. So some folks, it is just a movie. Some folks don't get it. An old roommate was like, I don't like whimsical things. I don't like that space stuff. Like, okay, I can't, you know, if it's not there, it's not there. But if it is there for you, it is that feeling. Like you just said, this whole world is coming up, Billy. And it's Star Wars everywhere for me.
It was Star Wars everywhere. And it was one of those things, too, where it was just like Star Wars became, for better or for worse, like my life. And I remember like all the other kids at school, like no one disliked Star Wars. Mm. They either didn't really care. They're like, yeah, I saw it. It was really cool. I like it a lot. But I was like, no. Why are we not talking about only Star Wars all the time? What is it like? Everyone acknowledged that I was like, this was like, a religious awakening for me. Mm-hmm. And, but it was, I never felt like, oh, the weird Star Wars kid. I was just like, no, this is just part of who I am now. Like, yeah. It's just, you know, and I really thought, you know, okay, well, a new Batman movie is going to come in the summer. That will be my thing. And Star Wars, you know, we had a very great little, you know, hot romantic fling and then it's over. But it didn't turn out to be that way. Like I had my Batman time, but as soon as Batman was kind of done by August, like it was back to Star Wars again, you know?
You're like telling Batman, like, look, we had fun. And you're looking over at Pierce Brosnan and Goldeneye going, your game's great. The movie's good. I just, I got to tell you, I've met Star Wars. I've met Star Wars.
It's like, I just, there's still lingering feelings for Star Wars.
I just feel it's working. It's just working in a way it wasn't with us. Sorry.
So it ended up being a very Star Wars Christmas in 97, as opposed to like Batman Forever in 95, where it was just like that movie came out in the summer. And by Christmas, I was still like, it's only about Batman. This time it was just like, it's Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. That's all I can think about is Star Wars, you know?
Yeah, no, hey, yeah, trust me. I know. That's why 6 years later, Force Center's even going stronger because Joseph and I, we talk off air. Sometimes we should just roll off air. Sometimes we shouldn't, but, and sometimes I accidentally forget to edit out clips and you hear some of us talking and I have to go back and edit it. But yeah, there's those days where we're like, hey, how you doing? Let's get to work. But also, oh my God, I watched Solo on Saturday. God, I had so much fun. Oh God, I cried again at Rise of Skywalker. Like, this is it, man. And are you, side note of this, but you kind of touched upon it in this era, you're falling in love with Star Wars, the other friends, maybe other things. Were you, or are you still like the Star Wars guy in your group of friends or the Star Wars person to those around you?
Oh yeah. It wasn't even close. Like, I was the kid that we did. This is so disrespectful now in hindsight. So I preemptively apologize, but we were doing like this Native American like studies thing in fifth grade, and you had to kind of like design like this piece of a tribal symbol. Mm-hmm. And I did the Star Wars logo, and my teacher sent it back, and she was like, no, like I have to draw the line here. Like, no. she's like, not everything can be Star Wars. Okay.
Look, I've said this before in Force, and I apologize for repeating it, but you reminded me of like, I'd be in big meeting when I was a security director, public safety director. I'd be in meetings with like the mayor, Antonio Villaraigosa, head terrorist. I'd be in these meetings doodling Death Stars, X-Wings and TIE fighters and AT-AT walkers in the corner of my notes. Like, it's Star Wars. Just, it never leaves you. It never leaves you once it's there.
Many assignments I had to redo because my Star Wars just, I wanted to, again, it was like, I felt like John Lennon in Star Wars was my Yoko. Like I just, and nothing else. That's all I wanted to spend my time and my thoughts on, you know? And for the most part, yeah, like my friends were like, yeah, we'll totally play, you know, Star Wars, or we'll talk about Star Wars or whatever. Yeah. But then they moved on to something else. And I was just like, but Star Wars is still here, you know?
Yeah, in the middle of the night, I call your name, Star Wars. All right, so in last thing here before we take a quick break here, Billy, and we're going to, in the break, we're going to play the trailer. Now, I haven't heard the trailer. I'm going to drop it in later. Billy and I aren't even going to hear it. But so I'm paraphrasing. I'm always bad with quotes anyways. But the best thing about that trailer, especially when I saw it for the first time there and that, you know, the little TV and the X-Wing explodes through it. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. And at the end of that trailer, the big VO guy says, and then you get to see The Empire Strikes Back on February 21st. And then you get to see Return of the Jedi on March 7th. I just like stop the car, which at the time for me was a 1981 Ford Fairmont. Stop the car. I got 3 straight months of Star Wars in the theater. You come out of the theater, you're in this world of Star Wars, Empire's coming, Return of the Jedi behind that. What do you do? Do you see him? Do you wait? Do you grab VHS tapes from Maddie? What do you do?
So Heather did have the VHS tapes, which Lucasfilm very smartly, you couldn't go buy them at that point.
Right.
You could not, because that was my very first thought was like, well, let's just go buy those yesterday. Nope, couldn't do it. And everyone had the same thought as I did, which is, okay, go to Blockbuster and rent it. Couldn't rent it. Like, it was just perpetually gone. So Heather had the VHSs of the trilogy with that artwork that I love. And I was actually, you know, the first month in between Star Wars and Empire, I was just so like still caught up in like, okay, I need to like collect everything I can and read everything I can, that I was able to hold out. I was like, you know what? I can't wait for Empire to see it in the theater. And I'm so glad I did, because Empire was not what I thought it was going to be at all. Mm. And I was not prepared for it in the best way possible.
That's amazing. So you would like, are you talking just in tone, the revelations, like now finally seeing the context of the father reveal, like that, everything about that on that side?
I think that it was definitely a tonal shift that the first one is just so like, you know, like you said, like borderline whimsical. Mm-hmm. And the second one was like, I was like frightened by like the cave sequence with Luke, and I was very frightened by the Minok, and I was just like, I wasn't frightened, but I was disturbed just kind of by like Han and Carbonite, and just like the dour kind of, you know, like that sense of dread over the film. The first film is just like, you know, like an adrenaline rush, like you just took a hit of cocaine or something.
Yeah,
and then
the
second movie is just like, a panic attack of Star Wars that I just wasn't ready for, but I was like, I was like enthralled by it. It was a different type of adrenaline rush, you know?
Yeah. No, look, hey, you're talking to someone who's still kind of scared about Large Barge and Pee-wee's Big Adventure. So I get you. The Mydogs, everything about it. I mean, the Wampa, you know, even the original version.
Oh, the Wampa. Yeah, for sure.
The special edition version, which I love, big fan of that change. I mean, that still got, when that Wampa pops up as a kid when I was watching VHS, like I needed to sleep with the lights on for a couple of days there. So I get you. So from Empire though, you're definitely on board. Nothing's changing. You're just like, your mind's probably blown even more. Now you get to
I mean, the fact that I was like, I knew the I'm your father thing. So that reveal wasn't like, But the context definitely was like, oh, I really get what that actually means now, and like the implications and, you know, the relationship change. What really threw me were two things. One, which is, no, there is another. And I was like going out of my mind, like, who is this other? I will die if I don't know who he's talking about. And then two was in the scene where Luke, I'm your father, all that stuff. Like the thing that really threw me for a loop, because I was like, you can't do that in a movie. I just could not get past the fact. I was like, did he just cut his hand off? Can't cut a, like, Batman doesn't get his arm cut off. Like that just doesn't happen. And I just, to the point where like I dwelled on the thought of Luke losing his hand for so long. You know, they say that George Lucas talked to a child psychologist, and the child psychologist said for Return of the Jedi, like, you have to have Yoda like say that Darth Vader is Luke's father, because kids aren't going to believe it. I didn't believe that Luke got his hand cut off, and I saw it, and I saw the replacement get put on. That after about 4 or 5 days, I like dug up. I bought like the kiddie versions of the novelizations, and I hadn't read them yet because I wanted to wait till I saw all three of the movies. But I was like, nope. Yeah. And I remember I was late for school because for some reason I like it was like 7:30 in the morning. I was like, I can't go any longer without knowing if what I saw was what I saw. And I like dug through the book to find it. And it was, there it was like Vader cuts, you know, with a slice of his saber, Luke's hand plummeted down. I was like, I just can't believe that that's a thing. I don't know why to this day, like I just was shell shocked that Luke lost his hand.
That's perspectives and entry points. And yeah, the focus understandably is on the father reveal, and even there is another, but yeah, that's pretty traumatic. Absolutely is. Absolutely. Our hero, the guy you're seeing him stare into the twin sons and you're rooting for him, and he's bloody and beaten. And the early memory, one of my favorite views still scenes in Star Wars moments is Vader just launching all those, pieces of equipment at him, and Luke flailing with his lightsaber, unable to take it down. And I look at it now, can watch it as an adult and have a different interaction with it. But as a kid, that terrified me. That whole sequence.
Now I'm still like, I still have like a sense of dread from the moment Luke shows up on Bespin until the end of that movie to this day. And I've seen that movie hundreds of times, and it's still like, I just get that like pit of my stomach feel, probably because I just was so in disbelief of what I saw. So of course, at that point I was like, I've been so good waiting for Empire. I cannot wait 3 more weeks to see Jedi. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Three weeks is a long time for a kid.
How you guys did 3 years, I will never know, because I just was like, nope, not going to happen. So I like begged Heather to give me the VHS. She's like, oh, one of our neighbors has it. So I had to wait another week. And then finally, she was like, I can't take it. So I got the VHS finally, and I watched it. And I remember when Darth Vader's helmet came off, I paused it. I was at my grandma and grandpa's house because I had to watch it in two parts. And I paused it when Luke's was about to take the helmet off. And I remember just like pacing. I was pacing in my grandma's den, just like, there, I'm never going to be able to go back to a time where I don't know what Darth Vader looks like under this helmet. Like this, it was like a life-changing moment, because I was like terrified of what it was going to be. It's like, whatever happens, this is it. You're going to now know what forever what he looks like. And then I pushed play and I was like, okay, it's not as bad as I had made it in my head. Because Empire, I was like, oh man, this is going to be gnarly if I have to look at this.
Well, yeah. Because you get the back of his head there when the ears and everything.
I was so terrified that honestly, like, as much as I would have loved to have seen all three for the first time in the big screen, I think I maybe like would have just been, it would have been like, I would have had too much of like a panic reaction. Like, I'm glad I went to Jedi. I was like, okay, I can experience this in the big screen and all that, but I don't have to freak out. Yeah. And it was the first time that I could watch it and be like, oh, and now I can look to see what's different, you know?
Oh, yeah. Which we'll talk a little bit more about in a second. This has been a lot of fun. And guess what? We're not done, folks. We're going to take a quick break here on Spotlight Star Wars. And like I said, I'm going to drop in that old trailer. Why not? We don't do that a lot here on Force Center, but let's all listen to that, take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk more about the Star Wars Special Edition with our friend Billy Patterson. Stick around for more Spotlight Star Wars.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
Now, for its 20th anniversary, the adventure of a lifetime returns to the big screen. In a way you've never seen before.
There'll be no one to stop us this time.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
With newly enhanced visual effects.
They're coming in too fast!
THX and digital sound. And a few new surprises.
Hanabuki. Pardon yanda.
On President's Day weekend, 1997,
good luck.
George Lucas and 20th Century Fox invite you to welcome back Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo, Darth Vader, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Chewbacca, C-3PO, and R2-D2. Finally, the motion picture event, the way it was meant to be experienced.
This will be a day long remembered.
As the entire Star Wars trilogy returns on February 14th, Star Wars, followed soon after by The Empire Strikes Back, and then Return of the Jedi.
Move closer!
For a whole new generation who have yet to experience it on the big screen. And for everyone else to experience it again.
That boy is our last hope.
No, there is another.
The Star Wars Trilogy. Special Edition. See it again for the first time.
The Force will be with you always.
Go see it again for the first time, my friends. And yes, a longtime Force Center listeners remember, I think I explained this on a Spotlight Star Wars, but I'm not saying I do it perfect like the announcer, but I still to this day, when talking about this space saga we all love, I will say Star Wars, like that announcer in that trailer. That's so much. I just think that trailer is, when you talk about great Star Wars trailers, that one was huge. It was huge for a lot of us, whether you were original trilogy generation fan, watching these with dubious eyes, wondering what did George do to these movies here, or you were like our guest Billy Patterson, you're a special edition generation baby, falling in love with Star Wars in 1997. That is the importance of the special edition trilogies, I think, more than all the changes and any Han shot first, Greedo shot first, McClunky of it all, doesn't matter. What's important is these movies helped introduce a new generation of fans to the wonderful world of Star Wars. Like Billy said in the first half of the show, the world was Star Wars. You fall in love with it, you come out, you're just surrounded. Toys, books, more movies, stuff on the way. But Billy, you grew up. We all grew up, right? You got a little older, unfortunately.
Not wiser, but older, technically, yes.
So as you get into, we're not even here to have that prequel conversation. That's an entire different conversation. You and I have had some of those conversations too here on Force Center. But the special editions, as you grow up and you start to get plugged in a little bit more into the pop culture zeitgeist and the pop culture discourse, and this is before podcasts and the internet as it is today, all those kind of things, and you yourself form maybe more refined opinions on cinema and the things you love, the opinions of the special editions always have been mixed. Understand it. We can talk about some of the changes here in a second. Understand some of it. There's even the bigger discussion of should art be changed? Does George even have this right? I personally think he does, though I get that conversation. There's some nuance to it. Totally get it. But I want to go to you, Billy, and your growth, and you get a little older, and the conversation of the special editions is not filled with the joy that you experienced in 1997. How did you experience that? How did you learn about that? And what are your thoughts on it then? And we'll talk about now.
You know, it's tough when you've been beaten up by the internet for so long, you start to kind of forget when the torment started.
Yeah.
So I can't really pinpoint exactly when I remember it being such a bad thing. I guess like the biggest one that I remember of people being very upset was maybe around like 2004, mm-hmm. 2006, when the DVDs were coming out, and you know, everyone was just saying like, well, I want the original untouched version. And at the time, and to be honest, even now, I just was like, why? Like, you know, because in my brain, I was like, no, I want the better version. I want the, and yeah. I guess like that's a little bit, I can understand the frustration because I say, I want the version I saw, which I totally sympathize that the version everyone mm-hmm. before me loved was the version they saw.
Yeah.
So I guess I was just, I shrug like, all right, I didn't know that they were that hated. To mm-hmm. me, I, even to this day, I think the special editions, like, are kind of like, you know, the additions to the special editions are like,
yeah,
you know, sure, they're moot and or quick to leave the screen at best, for me right. at least.
Mm. Yeah, this
is still Star Wars.
Yeah, it's still Star Wars. No, it's interesting, not to spin it down that. And we've done a lot of there's some Star Wars ranked special editions, things we love, all those kind of things. We obviously choose to connect with what we love here in Star Wars as a kind of a Force Center creed, but I don't mean this as a hot take, and I know you had your podcast Hot Takes with Billy Biz for right. a long time, which wasn't necessarily about crappy internet hot takes. It was something totally different and smarter, but I don't mean this as a hot take. I don't miss the original editions. Every time maybe they pop up, and as we're talking, I got two versions of them right in front of me that I could watch put in VHS, and I, and one day I might do it for fun. But I don't miss them in that regard. I get the bigger artistic conversation. I get it was something I saw then. But in my mind, George was tinkering literally opening weekend on. And again, you might not disagree with that. It's maybe the last time I'll say that caveat. It's a different conversation. But they're George's pieces of art. He wants to go back to them, and he does. And he's been doing it since 1977. Going back, going, I don't like that. Let me fix that. Let me fix this line. Let me do this. Let me change this. If you go through the list of changes on Wikipedia, it's amazing the long list of changes that began from 77. So to me, I'd rather see Kenobi's hut on that overlook shot they get there. I'd rather see the Sandcrawler. I'd rather see the cooler looking X-Wings. No disrespect to the model makers. Clearly, their influence is everywhere. But I like the X-Wings flying by in the Battle of Yavin. I'm there for all that. And like you said, it's Star Wars, man.
Yeah, I definitely remember, you know, after in that lull between April and August when the special editions VHS were released, borrowing or renting Star Wars again. And it's kind of like, you know, when I was a kid, I taped the Michael Keaton Batman on TV. Mm-hmm. And when I finally got my own copy of it years later, it just felt weird that there weren't commercial breaks there. I was like, oh, I've just been Pavlov's dog. I'm trained to like, there's a commercial at this point. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way when I watched the original theatrical cuts of Star Wars, where I was just like, oh, but it's missing the thing right here, you know? When like the X-Wings all leave Yavin, like I didn't have the biggest TV. Like when I saw it, I was like, is there just nothing there at all? Like I had to get up close and be like, oh, those teeny little white specks are supposed to be the ships leaving. Like at first I just thought, I was like, there's literally nothing there. That's weird. Why would, you know, what's going on? So like for me, I just the way that I ingested Star Wars, like a non-special edition is very strange to me, which I've seen the original theatrical cuts many times. And each time it's just like ever so slightly jarring.
Yeah. Look. Yeah. And there's a lot of the other fan edits on everything. And I respect it all there. But Rick McCallum, and this is a reading from Wikipedia here. He had this quote at the press conference for the episode one DVD in 2001. Rick McCallum, probably chomping some gum and dropping an F-bomb, says, and one of the great things about doing the special editions was we were able to go back and do the original Star Wars A New Hope exactly the way George wanted it, the way he had written it. Whether people liked it, it didn't matter. It was his movie and he couldn't make it when he first made it because there were so many compromises he had to go through. Look, it's just the way it is. You know, I have the book out there, Why We Love Star Wars. You can get it wherever books are booked. There's two factual errors, one that slipped past me and one that slipped past my editor. There's a typo describing the YT 1300 freighter. Looks like I said YT 300. There are some sentences that I didn't agree to, like that weren't edited by the editor. Like, I would change that book. I'd put out a special edition the week after it was released. I'm not saying I'm George Lucas. I'm just saying I get it. I get George going to that theater. Even Mark Hamill has said in interviews, you go back, find interviews. We read the script and the cantina was amazing. We got there. It was like a guy in a wolf mask. Like, what? So from that point of view, Star Wars being kind of a living document that changes as it goes. Even the McClunkies, when I get such a kick out of McClunky that George was like, and one more.
I have a McClunky shirt, which I think, you know, I don't wear it. Ironically, I wear it almost to say like, yeah, like Star Wars is goofy and sometimes, and it's all good with me, you know,
nothing, we'll talk about the Han one, but nothing other than that one to me drastically changes anything in the themes, the core, the lessons, the inspiration, the myth of the story. And that's all I think I care about in the end. You want to put some window dressing on it. You want to put Hayden's eyes here and there. You want to, I'm fine with it all. Other discussions to be had, I guess. But like, I do love it there. The big thing I'm asking about, we can talk about the changes specifically here. I do want to talk in a bit about Han shot first, all that stuff. But my big thought behind this question and the theme of it here, Billy, is, did you feel when you started to pick up on like, oh, there's things and Han shot first or didn't shoot first and all this, was your joy just tempered at all? Did your love of it, was it affected? Or you as you just said, kind of like, not worried. It's still Star Wars.
I'd be lying if I said that there wasn't a smidge of disappointment that the world does not hold the special edition in as high esteem as I do. If anything, just because like of what it meant to me then, like I just never have been interested in the Han shot first mentality of Star Wars. Like also because, you know, like I you know, film and art and everything is to me, like they're just tools. They're just tools that give us a common language that help us understand each other. And as you just said, like, there's nothing within the special editions that fundamentally alters like the set of tools that it gave me to understand myself and to understand other people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I mean, maybe it's, I'm being over the top here, but it's not like George went back and said, you know what? You know, Luke strikes Vader down out of anger. Revenge was right. It's now Revenge of the Jedi special. Like it was just window dressing and beautiful window dressing and weird window dressing. Jedi rocks. Joe Yaza, not my favorite, but over the years, I hum and sing to that song as well. Because
I mean, there are some changes that I think are absolutely better that are blasphemous. Like I understand that for a generation, Yub Nub was how it ended, and that was great. I think what's in there now is 100% more appropriate for the film that you just watched, you know?
I always say I still have Yub Nub on CD, probably even cassette somewhere on a mixtape. I can enjoy it. I can find it on YouTube. I can watch the VHSs if I want to find the cord to hook up that VCR in my living room. But yeah, the victory celebration song, but also seeing parts of the galaxy, I just think it is more appropriate. And again, I'm not saying this since I don't think you are either, Billy. This isn't declarative hot takes. These are opinions and action. But the thing you said, you touched on it there of I'm kind of talking about, hey, 99, 2000. And also there's a lot of prequel discussion going around that Billy. But even now, and this is why we're here. I've been on other shows where guests have been like, oh, I'm a Star Wars fan. I don't watch the special editions. Those aren't Star Wars. I refuse to acknowledge those. And again, that's their journey. Not here to take it away, but I'm always kind of like, ouch, babe. Like, that is someone's Star Wars. That is also our Star Wars. Like, do you even now, do you get defensive, want to strike back, or just say, hey, I am a special edition generation kid. I'm here too.
The biggest, I guess, regret that I would have, which I can easily remedy, is like one of my favorite posters that I absolutely love is Three Reasons Why They Invented Movie Theaters. It's just all black with like this like metallic like Star Wars kind of emblem in the middle. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to get it a few years ago, but I was like, oh, everyone's just going to be like, why'd you get a special? If you're going to get a Star Wars thing, why'd you get the special editions?
Right.
Which now I'm just like, well, who cares? I'm the one that's going to look at it every day. And that's my favorite thing. So why don't I just get it? Maybe after this, I'll buy it. So yeah. I guess in a weird way. Yeah. Like there with everything, I think there was like a time where it was just like, okay, I do like the prequels. I'm just not going to really talk about it. You know, or like, I do love the special editions or it's not even like special editions versus theatrical. Like, I guess my quote unquote hot take is like, I don't think they're really that much different from each other. Like to say one is Star Wars and one is not seems asinine to me. You know, if 98% of the movie is exactly the same, like the DGA would still give him credit. So, I don't know. Like, I guess maybe I'm at a point in my life where I'm just like, I like what I like. And I truly can like live peacefully knowing that a lot of people just don't like it.
Hey,
you know?
You've reached a good spot. And I think I get there at times and, you know, being involved in podcasts and you and I kind of working in this, you know, pop culture digital landscape, it can get exhausting. And you and I, this is almost off topic, but you and I have had those conversations where even some of our coworkers or colleagues were just like their opinions and takes, I just can't deal with. I love them to death, but I'm just going to go in my corner and love Star Wars.
I mean, I've been that person to you personally.
Yeah.
We've had three major discussions about Rogue One. The first one was me being the aggressor, like, what are you thinking liking this? The second one was like, well, I respect your opinion, but you're wrong.
Yeah.
And then the third one, and all this was over the span of like 2 years. And the third one was like, you know, I like certain parts of this, and it makes me happy that you like certain parts too. And I'm glad that we can talk about the things that we like. Yeah. Like, I feel like Rogue One was like, you could see my maturation of just like, you know what? Joseph says it and you say it all the time. Like, in this big banquet of Star Wars, there's Star Wars stuff out right now that I just don't really, you know, it's not my thing, or I don't care for it. Yeah. I just don't talk about that one, or I don't dwell on that one. I just talk about the ones that I really do like.
We'll do the Rogue One conversation at the 25th anniversary Spotlight Star Wars. But I remember that conversation we had, and we didn't know each other super well yet, but you had come on board at Defy working on the Screen Junkies brand where I was. And essentially you were kind of replace me in that position and made it even better. And you have more producing skills than I do. But we had mutual friend and Brittany Wallach, and this was, and so I really loved you. I thought you and I, like I said, same kind of grump. This is great. And we were in the break room by the refrigerator and that coffee machine. And you started talking, and I and my heart just was like, oh man, I wanted to love Billy so bad. I really wanted to love him, but I can't, I just can't, I can't, but again, over time, and you give distance and you don't fight fire with fire. You just, there. And if, by the way, if you never came around, whatever that phrase means, if you were still like, nah, Rogue One, every second of it, I don't like. We wouldn't change our friendship, but that's because you connect with what you love in Star Wars, and that's what I'm there for, you know?
Yeah. I wish people would I feel like the conversation from Special Edition was never really about like, wow, this kind of like brought Star Wars back to life. Because imagine if this was just a complete crash and burn and no one had seen it. Like, you have to think like, yeah, episode one would have come out, but would it have been such a surefire thing? You know, like this, you know, you kind of forget that this was like, this was assurance. Like, okay, we are go for launch. Like, people are ready for Star Wars again, you know?
Yes. Look, that's what was happening. I mean, George is putting together these movies, but he's starting to write Phantom Menace in what, 94, 95. He pulls out that yellow notepad and starts writing, And I'm reading the Paul Duncan Star Wars Archives books of that era, which is like 97 to 2005. It's just the most amazing books. I love them. Love the J.W. Rinsler ones as well. But these are just wonderful experiences to go through. It's a journey. And that's what the special editions is. It is not just to me, George, I got to go fix something. It's also like, hey, you know, what's out there? Is the fandom still there? The dark days of Star Wars are real. Those late 80s into the early 90s, the Zahn books, I'm not a huge fan of them over time. They're not my favorite Star Wars anymore, but God bless it. They brought Star Wars back in 1991, 92. They were part of that, but it was still novels. It was still something not everyone was connecting with. Not everyone. It was nerd talk. Like, if you read the new Star Wars, Heir of the Empire stuff, special editions did explode it back onto the screen, almost literally, and led to the prequel generation, led to the prequels. And I have so much love for the prequel generation because we're talking about Star Wars now. I'm here in Force Center now. We got new Star Wars shows, books, comics, movies now because the love of your generations, putting you with the prequels there, you literally picked it up and continued to run with it.
I mean, it was just such an exciting time because it was like, you know, I mentioned this in a different episode where I had, you know, one of the first things I got after the special edition was this like special, you know, retrospective magazine that kind of talked about, you know, Star Wars, the special editions, but also kind of hinted that there was more coming, you know, that episode one could be a reality, a new Star Wars could be coming. And it was just like, you know, I admire, you know, people like you and Joseph that, you know, there was a good chance Star Wars was just never coming back. And it's like, you can hold on to what you have and that's cool. But it was like, for me, you know, to this kind of like embarrassment of riches, it's like, I get introduced to this world and then the next year, you know, there's a trailer out or, you know, that a new one's going to be made. Like, I didn't have to wait or I didn't have to like wonder, like, is this kind of like, is this it? Like,
yeah.
This was just the beginning. So to come in at this point was just like, that's why I said at the beginning, like, I can't imagine coming in at any other time than 1997 to be such a spoiled brat with Star Wars. Like, I was spoiled rotten with Star Wars, because not only was it like, yeah, Power of the Force and all these figures came out in 95, but it was 97 where the green cards came out, because people were buying them, that it's like, okay, we're going to make everybody. So I never had to worry that I wasn't going to get an action figure of this certain character. Like, that just never... that never was a reality that I had to live in. It was always just like more and more and more and more, not wondering where the next Star Wars meal was going to come from.
Man, this is great stuff. And did you find it was easier to, we could go for hours now about the prequels. I don't want to do that here. We'll do it some other time. But because these movies come right around the corner, did you find that it was easier to be more open to them or to fans of them because it was all around you, if you know what I mean? Because I'll say this, like, I think sometimes the original trilogy generation, we forget what you're describing. We forget those dark days. We forget when it went away. We forget when we were told, like, well, all right, Luke, Leia, Han, they won the day. Lando's clapping. The Ewok's dancing. Party's over. Turn the lights out. Time to grow up. Time to go into the real world. Put your Star Wars toys away. And I think that could make you defensive about it, right? It's the kind of the old classic nerd thing. Nerd was different back then. You were beat up for being a nerd. You had to hold on to it. So when other people started coming along in special edition era, and even 95 Power Force, whatever you want to say, and then the prequel edition, and people are like trying to grab, they're almost like trying to grab the toys from you. And you're like, no, mine. I lost it and it's in my heart and you can't take it from me. And I just think that's my generation has that and maybe has to grow through that. You had a different experience. It was everywhere and everyone was getting on board.
Yeah, I think because you're talking from 97 to 99, like, there wasn't time for cynicism, there wasn't time for me to get jaded by anything Star Wars, because by the time that I had already gotten into it, you know, like, the floodgates were just open at that point. So I never felt like, well, this is my Star Wars and whatever's coming. It was like, no, like, this is my Star Wars and that one's going to be my Star Wars and that one's my Star Wars. Like, it all just felt like, again, like, insanely kind of like myopic, right? But it was like, this is all for me. This is all great, you know?
Little Billy Patterson of Fresno, California, you have won Star Wars. It is
everything. Yeah, that's what I felt like. I felt like I had just like stumbled onto this, like, it's weird. I knew it was a phenomenon and I knew that millions upon millions of people were into it, but it always felt like, well, yeah, but they made it for me.
Absolutely. It's all for me. It's all for me, but you're willing to share. That's the important thing. I do want to discuss a little bit of the changes before we get on out of here tonight. I love most of them. I'm so used to them. And right, I forget. We were even... I think you and I independently, I'm gonna get to that change here. Here's, I'm looking on our wonderful friends at Wikipedia. There was one change. I got to tell you, it's in Return of the Jedi. And I didn't realize it was a change. I just forgot. And it is the line, of course, there's so many changes. I'm really scrolling through. It's the line of Lando and Han in their exchange on Tatooine, where Han, for so many years of my life, said, "It's all right, trust me." But in the special edition, Han says, "It's all right. I can see a lot better." To this moment, totally forgot that that was a change.
I mean, it's classic Han humor, you know, like, it's okay. I can see a lot better now. I think it's one of those things too, where, you know, you're reading all the, you know, the making of Star Wars books and like, you can just see like, for a 70 millimeter print versus 35 millimeter print versus a stereo mix versus a Dolby mix. Like, there are a lot of different audio versions of all the Star Wars movies. So yeah, like, to have these, you know, to be able to, now technology had caught up where it's like, oh, you can choose the best version of the soundtrack that you want for this definitive version. It's like, that's just, to me, a better line. Like, that's more classically Han, which is just like, I thought you were blind. No, I can see better. Don't worry. You know, like, that feels more in line with Han Solo. So like, I haven't seen the original untouched movies enough to even know that wouldn't be there, you know?
Some of these changes, and again, some of them are pretty big. I always said the Little Shop of Horrors, Sarlacc Pit thing, the beak that comes out, not my favorite, but then over the years, that any passion I had for that, not being my favorite has waned. And then Book of Boba Fett comes along, and it's like a horror sequence when that thing comes out and tries to grab Boba Fett and Fennec in the ship there. And I was like, you know what? I'm okay with that. That worked for me. 25 years later, I'm on board with Beak Sarlacc. That's some of the changes to me. Some of you can't recognize. But I don't know. It's like, you know, remember when it used to be more and more, but remember when like you'd log into Facebook and suddenly the interface was different because they changed and everyone would spend 2 weeks complaining about new Facebook and they wanted old Facebook back. Then after a while, I couldn't even tell you what old Facebook was. It just went out of my life.
Yeah, you look back at old Facebook and it looks super bizarre.
Yeah.
You're like, how did I even use this?
Yeah, what is this? Yeah. And that's
how I feel about like the Sarlacc in particular. Like when I did watch it on VHS, I was like, okay, it's just like it's a pretty big hole. Yeah, there's a lot of like teeth on it, but I feel like if you fell right in the middle, not so bad. You're not going to get hurt that bad. And then I saw the special edition. I was like, oh no, there's a mouth in there. Never mind. You're screwed.
You're screwed. Look, I grew up laughing. One of my little inside jokes is, you know, that shared unique inside joke that I thought only I saw is, you know, one of Jabba's henchmen falls in and the teeth move like they're foam. You know, I just remember as a kid always pointing that out. It's not that bad. The teeth are like foam. So maybe it needed to be.
He doesn't brush or floss. Yeah. That's why.
Very weak teeth in that Sarlacc pit. Any other, we'll get to Han here. We'll get to Han shooting first there. Any other changes that over time you've looked back and I don't love, or is it just all the new wallpaper?
You know, the only one that I didn't love, they took out the, in the special edition, what I thought was kind of dumb even at the time was Luke, in Empire Strikes Back, you know, Luke he just got his hand cut off, if you can believe it. And his only way out is down and he jumps and they put, I believe it's the Emperor's Scream on there. Right, and I just thought, well, that sounds like it was an accident. You know, like, did you not mean to jump? And I remember when the DVDs came out in 2004, George must have been like, yeah, that one wasn't a good idea. Never mind. And they took it out and it hasn't been there since. So that was the only one that was like, I don't like it.
Yeah, no, a lot of that. Yeah. Ewoks blinking later, a little bit later, right? The DVDs, the adding now of Temuera Morrison is I totally works for me now over the original voice of was it Jason Whitegreen, I believe his name that at the time I might have been like, why would you replace Boba Fett? Now it works for me, all that stuff. But like, yeah, a lot of the legacy of the special editions, particularly New Hope. Well, we got Rontos because of that. We got, see more of Tatooine, more of Mos Eisley. I've always been a fan of that stuff. That has always kind of worked for me. And even at the time, just felt it was like, well, I remember seeing that theater on that day, 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. show, and just going, oh my God, cool. Like, you actually see them right into Mos Eisley. I loved that kind of stuff.
I know the Jabba scene was like the one that got the most press coverage.
And look, they've continued to go back to it, and it's still not the best. It's still a repeated beat. I always say this, like with deleted scenes, I love a good deleted scene, but it's very rare that I watch an entire complete deleted scene and think, yeah, that should have been in the movie. Because it's not like Peter Jackson, Return of the King, like five, that's a different thing than JJ going, yeah, we cut this because the pacing. More often than not, the directors and the editors are right. I think that moment with Jabba is just a repeated beat. A repeated threat. You're repeating a lot of the stuff from Greedo, which is why they had the Greedo thing in there, I think, in a lot of ways. Not the shooting first, but the lines, the dialogue. So I get it, but it was fun because I grew up, knowing of that this deleted scene, and there was a Scottish guy saying, Han, my boy. And we got to see that scene, despite how bad it did look at the time, and they've tried to fix it. I almost didn't care because I finally got to see that scene I read about for so long.
Yeah, I mean, look, as an adult who has studied film now, like, of course, you shot the Greedo scene, so you didn't have to do the Jabba scene because it's the exact same dialogue. But as a 10-year-old kid, first of all, I was like, this is awesome that I'm seeing something that wasn't there, that I know wasn't there before. That was like the only thing I knew from like the news coverage was that this was like a scene that wasn't there before. He looks completely different from Return of the Jedi. But again, as a 10-year-old, I was like, oh, because between New Hope and Return of the Jedi, he just got like fatter. You know, like yeah. You just connect those dots because they're not like, oh, plot hole, you know? It's just, no, he just like, no, he just like, he's gotten worse since the last time Han saw him. That was just how my brain worked. And I loved that in Empire Strikes Back at that point, when, you know, he's talking to General Reich and he's like, Jabba the Hutt put a thing, bounty on my head or whatever. It's like, oh, I know who that is. Because I saw him in the last movie. Again, as a 10-year-old, I was just like, oh, cool. I know Jabba. I remember him from the last one. Yeah, you know,
That's that guy. Now he's more corpulent and he's just a sedentary. He's just sitting in his office more now than he's not getting out and about. Okay, so let's get to this Han shot first thing. I'm reading here again on Wikipedia and talking about the 1997 changes. It says, just listing the changes, Greedo now fires an inaccurately aimed shot at Han before being shot in the cantina while Han bobs his head slightly to, quote, dodge the shot. And then in parentheses, this change caused a great uproar in the community and thousands of fans complained. That is a very polite way. It's like Cersei Lannister saying, oh, that's it. Yes. That's a very nice way to say millions of fans cried out in anger. It's fine now. Like, I don't care. I think it's the only time I've heard George, you know, I get his point of view. He says, not quoting here, but, you know, it's the first time you see Han, he's shooting this guy in cold blood, and it's just not necessarily the message of I wanted to get out there. And in my 20s and in early 30s, I was like, whatever, Han's a badass. He'd kill anyone in a second. Over time, the good guy buried beneath that smuggler persona, I'm okay with it more and more, because I also think Solo, a Star Wars Story, does a great job telling you why he would do that, not out of cold blood, but out of survival and out of knowing the world a little bit more. That's the powerful lesson there when he shoots Tobias and all that stuff. I just love that movie. So I'm okay with it. But that's the only thing. That's the only thing for me is, but I also get George's point more now than I did then of, if you're watching it for the first time, that's the first time you see the guy. It sets a little bit of a different tone than maybe we want with Han. And I'm not saying that I 100% agree with that, but I understand it at least.
See, I feel like the original way of it, you know, the way that I remember it, it's almost kind of like you can't even tell they're shooting. It's kind of like a puff of smoke down. It's very, but that seems to me more out of character of Han Solo. Because, you know, the argument that I saw a lot was like, well, it changes the character of Han Solo. He's this cold-blooded, ruthless guy. And then at the end, he comes around like, that's not the read that I put on it, because even what the movie is telling us up until that point is he's all suave and a hard ass with Luke and Obi-Wan, like, she's fast enough for you, old man. But then the minute they walk out the door, he's kind of a dork. He's like, oh man, Chewie, oh wow, we really got, like, it's all an act.
Yes.
So for Greedo to have this like really, really hardcore badass moment with Greedo, like, almost seems like that's not within the character of Han Solo that is consistent throughout the next few movies of, like, you know, Han is kind of like thinks he's cooler than he actually is, which Solo just 100% doubles down and reaffirms.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the change to me, like, I don't think, like, graphics wise, CGI wise, it's sometimes a little sloppy how they like moved him out of the way. Like, okay, but the intent of it, I actually think is more correct than the original.
This is a hot take that I really think, actually, Billy, you nailed it in a lot of ways for me. Look, if he never changed it, I wouldn't be like, it's just bad that he shoots first. It's a cool moment. It's an iconic character. It's a great intro. That's why I can get it. I had one of those shirts that said Han shot first, right? Like, I had that 97, the same one that George was on set in a little bit later on. Right. But I think you're right. That is Joseph and I always talk about it. And Joseph loves that about Han, of the powerful declaration of, yeah, everything's great. And then the quiet whispered, oh God, things aren't great. So that's a lot about Han. And you're right. He is like, yeah, whatever. And then, cool, Chewie, we got our money. Yay. It is Han. It is him. It's not an act like he's faking it. It's a persona he's constantly trying to live up and live up to. live up to, because deep down inside, he knows he's the good guy and he knows he's different. He just doesn't want to commit. He runs away from it. He runs away from so much. That's what Kira sees in him. That's what she talks about in the book Most Wanted by Ray Carson. That's why I love that. I always mention that book. So I think there's some, I think there's some evidence to put behind your theory here of George maybe got it right in some sense. I still think it doesn't look great.
No, but I don't think it looks great either. I think culturally, especially Star Wars fans, I think we have a hard time coming to grips with the fact that, like, at his core, Han's kind of dorky. That's kind of why we love him, is because, you know, like, Han is, he exudes cool, but it's definitely like something that he has to like put out there, because if you get Han, you know, by himself, like running towards those stormtroopers, like, yeah, whoops, there's way more than I thought. Or, you know, like, hey, it's me, you know, like they acknowledge, yeah, that Han's kind of not maybe as cool. And, you know, Luke rolls his eyes. Like, that to me is more Han Solo than like this gunslinging Clint Eastwood type vision.
Now we're having a great Han Solo conversation, but this comes out of the special editions. This is why I love this, Billy. This is great. I think you're right. In a lot of ways, I just said recently in Force Center that, hey, it's me, is like one of my favorite Han Solo moments. And I sometimes don't love Harrison Ford Return of the Jedi. I think he sleptwalked a little bit through some of it, but that's the adult film critic-y side of me. But it's all BS. It's great Han, but like that moment is pure Han, because it is like, hey, it's me, which means everything's going to go wrong.
which is so funny, not to get off topic, but yeah, I will say, like, Han Solo in Return of the Jedi always felt like a different Han Solo to me.
Yeah.
And as a kid watching it, I was like, oh, because Jabba's dead. Like, he feels like he's, yeah, free now. And so we get to see like a carefree Han Solo for the rest of this movie. That's why he kind of acts different, is because, yeah, he doesn't have stress anymore. Like, that's how I rationalized it as a 10-year-old.
I love that. And look, there's something to that, but also to the thing, like, he finally committed. I think that's often forgot. And it's the detail in the Empire Strikes Back novel by Donald Glut. That doesn't necessarily mean it's 100% canon, because then Obi-Wan and Owen would be brothers according to the Jedi novel. But Luke is in their Empire. He is a commander, but like Han is captain of the Millennium Falcon. He's running away when we see him in Empire Strikes Back. He's out of here. Thanks, General. I got to go. I don't want to be part of this rebellion. He doesn't join until Return of the Jedi. So a lot of that carefree Han, I think, also comes from, I finally committed to something. I'm finally here. I'm here with this woman I love. I think she loves that other guy, but we'll work out that later. But, you know, we're here. I'm here. And I think there's something to that. But also going back to what the special editions kind of makes me think about Han even more, as we have this discussion. You're right. He's this cool Clint Eastwood-like badass that just killed this guy in cold blood. And then the rest of the movie, he's running straight forward into trouble and barely surviving. In fact, he's not surviving. He's in a trash compactor and doesn't know how to get out. Like, he ain't the cool badass. He is what we know Han to be, a lovable, bumbling smuggler trying to get by.
Just like even how annoyed they get with him when he tries to be a badass and he shoots it. Looks like, would you stop? I already tried it. Like, stop trying to be cool. Like, this is not the time, yeah, to be cool Han Solo, you know? Like, yeah, that's why, like, you know, that Han shot first thing, I'm just like, yeah, I just, even if it bothered, like, you know, as we both said, the graphics bother me, like, it's just a strange hill to die on for me, because it feels so out of character anyway, that I would see that as like a positive change, which, again, not trying to be hot take Sally on your podcast here. It just, it was one of the things where, like, I was truly baffled when people were like, you know, I hate the special edition and I really hate the Han Greedo scene. I didn't even realize that was like a thing. Like, I didn't even put two and two together about the who shot first. It's like, okay.
Yeah,
I guess I don't get it, but I guess.
And look, it's one of the big pop culture moments, indeed. And I get it. And I love making the reference. I still have that T-shirt. It's a little ratty, worn out. I can't wear it in public anymore, but I still hold on to that one there. Billy, we're almost done here. This has been a lot of fun having this discussion. You and I could go on and on, and maybe we will again, because there's still two more special edition movies to talk about and a lot more to talk about with you. But as we wrap up here, I want to talk about a little bit of the legacy of the special editions. I think we just talked about a big part of it, which is what it did or didn't do for the Han character, depending on all of your point of view. But the legacy of the special editions, you in a theater, 10 years old, falling in love with Star Wars, because because of these movies. Because prior to it, it was just a robots walking in the desert, weird movie that wasn't anything I'd seen before. I don't know. I'm not involved. These movies brought Star Wars into your life in a way that has never left. I want you to close the show a little bit, talk about the legacy and how you think about them now.
I mean, there's a magic around the special edition. And like, if I'm being blunt, the legacy of the special edition is that's Star Wars now. Like,
yeah.
Love it or hate it, like the special edition, that's what it is now. But, you know, like just to think broadly, like it was, you know, coming from the era of, you know, Batman and Power Rangers and then here drops this, you know, sci-fi fairy tale. And it really did just like it took me, and I can now say it's like it wasn't the spectacle because I'd seen special effects, and yeah, maybe the hype and the FOMO got me in the door, but I think it speaks to why Star Wars is what it is, that, you know, 20 years later, a generation removed, that it had the exact same effect on me as it did, you know, your generation and the generation, or, you know, even the people a little bit older than you that were kids when A New Hope came out. Like, there's something about Star Wars that is universal. And like I said, you know, for me, art is just, it's just a language. It's just a tool that we can use to understand each other. And I think having Star Wars come in at this time where I was 10 years old and, you know, I'm not quite where Luke is, but, you know, I'm starting to look like, what is life going to be like when I'm getting older and seeing like, there's a whole world out there. You know, Fresno is not Tatooine, but it's close. It's not Coruscant, you know?
you're not too far from where Lucas is stomping ground. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it just was kind of like this, you know, I think it hit at a very impressionable time, 10 years old. Like, I'm so grateful that I got to have this life-changing thing come at like the most pivotal point of my life, which is like right before, you know, a teenager and adolescence with no cynicism. Like, it just didn't, I got to see Star Wars when there was no internet, there was no debate, there was no, you know, like, there was no hot takes and venom and nastiness. I just didn't, it didn't exist to me. So, you know, I kind of, in a way, you know, again, like that kind of generational preference, like I kind of lament the fact that there hasn't been a special edition that, you know, came out 20 years after that kids now can go see in the theaters. They got their own Star Wars, and that's awesome. I guess, you know, just looking back, like I can't believe that I got to see all three Star Wars movies for the first time in theaters within the 3 months. And then I got that year of anticipation for a new Star Wars movie, and I got to do it all over again. And it really never stopped since then. So yeah, like special editions, like, sure, we can fight all day about how you don't like that, you know, they made the rock bigger that R2 hides in front of in the canyon. But that's not what the special edition is about at all. The special edition is Star Wars. Maybe you thought there were dark times. Maybe it was on life support. You can't kill it, man. It is just as potent and powerful any year, any generation as it ever was. And it brought so many of us to the party. Like, how could you be upset at that?
You can't. And you shouldn't. And I hope none of you out there listening are. This has been a wonderful conversation. Billy, this is, I hope your excitement and anticipation for putting the kid to bed and getting on a Star Wars podcast to get out, I hope it all paid off, because this is a wonderful conversation. I thank you a lot.
I'm going to have to go buy that poster now. I've talked myself into it for the last hour.
You're absolutely going to do it. Billy, I know you're busy at Fandom, doing a lot of work over there, still doing some stuff with the Screen Junkies crew when it pops up, and you're busy raising a wonderful child. But anything that you want to tell people to go listen to, any old episodes of Hot Takes, or are you doing new ones at all?
Hot Takes is over. You know, I think as I've gotten a little bit more settled into career and family, you know, like, I don't need to blast my unpopular opinions on the internet. There's plenty of those. I would say you're already doing it, but go back and listen to the Force Center ranked that we did about my favorite additions to the special editions. And, you know, we talked about all the Taco Bell merch and all that fun stuff. All special edition stuff that you and I have talked about has been fun.
Yeah, it's been great. We'll do it again. It's good to get you back up on the Star Wars public talking horse here, because I know you kind of, like me, sometimes the Discord puts you down into a little bunker on an island in Octo, and we just want to enjoy it on our own. But good to have you here. Great conversation. Appreciate that. Folks, thanks for listening to the 150th edition of Spotlight Star Wars here on the Force Center podcast feed. If you want to find more, maybe you're just joining us here, maybe the Book of Boba Fett brought you our way, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well, where we now rebroadcast audio versions of the podcast there. Eventually, one day, we'll roll some cameras. In fact, tonight, we did a virtual audio session, and Billy's like, man, I put makeup on. I thought we were going to do cameras, but maybe next step. Maybe next step. We're also on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Also, we have had a show going here on the companion app, which is a great sci-fi, deeper discussions, wonderful nuanced conversations, but also just a celebratory tone. Check out the companion app. And we've been doing Data Bank Dive, an exclusive series for them. You can sign up and listen. Been a lot of fun over there. You can support me by just following me if you want at Ken Napsok, or going to kennapsok.com to find out all the other things I'm doing. This has been a lot of fun talking about special editions 25 years old this year. That's crazy. Thanks for listening, everybody. And as I always used to say on Spotlight Star Wars, man, may that Force thing kind of sort of always stay around you. All right. See you next time, friends.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.